I'm sitting at my kotatsu table and I have a cup of tea, which is PG Tips, British Indian tea with some milk from Lawson's Konbini. Tastes a bit more acidic in Japan than it did in Germany, I think, because the water is different and the milk is different. You might recall I posted a video of David Bowie talking about milk in Japan in 1978, where he says it has an interesting taste, and it's different from American milk and different from European milk. He was being courteously relativist there, not saying that any milk was real milk, of course. So this is a slightly more acidic tea. I also find the green tea I drink here rather acidic, but I'm now quite comfortable in the new house. I've got the main room I use is, I guess, what you'd call the bedroom stroke living room. I've turned the bedroom into the cupboard, or rather the cupboard into the futon cupboard into the place where I sleep, because it's big enough to just about stretch out. And you can close the doors and you get warmth and darkness at any time of day. And then, but that's tiny. I mean, it feels like a Tudor room, because it has this kind of beamed wooden roof above you, which is really just the shelf of the closet above you. And then outside the doors of that little sleeping area, I've got a Denki carpet covered in. Denki carpet is an electric carpet which you plug into the mains, and it kind of smoulders and glows and keeps you warm if you're in direct contact with it very effectively. So I've got basically two tatamis worth, or it's rather, it's covered in two tatami mats, this electric carpet. And then there's a kotatsu table, which is a low kind of kneeling table with a heater underneath it. Mine is not operative because it's a table I just found on the street. I'm also using one of those zaisu, I think it's called zaisu chairs, which is just a legless chair. Everything at ground level, which gives you more space and certainly more impression of space above you, because the furniture would take you closer to the ceiling. Again, I found the chair on the street, and there's a particular place down the Dobutsu in my arcade where I find this discarded furniture. And Hisai said, "You may be stealing a homeless person's furniture." I don't think I am, because this was all beside a garbage truck and it was a garbage bin, and it was obviously being thrown out. It was sort of upended and not being used, so I think it was okay to take it. That's a scary area down there. I was thinking, you know, I pitched an article to the New Statesman, which would be entitled "Happiness is a Warm Slum," because I'm living here next to Japan's biggest slum, effectively. If you go down, I've described where I'm living as Shinsekai, which means new world and has a nice poetic resonance, and is well known to tourists because Shinsekai is the entertainment district, a big pedestrianized district around the Osaka Tower. Which is well known to be like a time warp, takes you back to the 60s and 70s. There are amazing cinemas with hand-painted posters, porn cinemas, pop kabuki theaters. In fact, I'm living a little bit to the north of that. It's really Ebisucho, the district I'm in, which is close to Nipponbashi, which is actually a very short distance by bike from Midosuji Avenue, which is the main sort of Champs-Élysées of Osaka. It's a tree-lined street with all the luxury stores, like the Apple Store. I go there pretty much daily because Citibank is there next to the Apple Store, and I can take money out of Citibank. I can't use any other banks. Still, you can't use Japanese banks if you're a foreigner and have foreign bank cards. I'm living on euros. I've been living for the past 3 weeks on money I earned teaching in the university, the art school in Kassel. And I've kind of gone through that money, and I'm now starting to dig into money I earned just the week before that teaching in Oslo, which was quite a substantial chunk of money, and that'll see me through hopefully for the rest of the couple of months before I go back to Europe to earn more money. I'm not really earning any money in Japan, except for this little trade I've got where I'm selling. I've just learned today the word for them. I call them lifesavers, but they're actually called katate. And they're part of the heating solutions the Japanese people have come up with to to evade the cold in their houses, they localize the heating. So you have, for your legs, you have the kotatsu table, which is covered with a blanket, which keeps your lower half warm. Then you might have a chanchanko jacket, a padded kind of waistcoat, or you might have a katate, which just really covers your shoulders and your neck, keeps them warm, and it's a sort of puffer jacket with a really like makes you look like an American football player or a medieval knight with body armor, because it is like a breastplate or something as well. It fastens at the front with a little Velcro stick, and it's available. Still available for a very reasonable $30 or €30 tip. If you want to spend less, then pay in dollars, because €30 is quite considerably more than $30. But if you want to keep me in Jin and Mink, then please do pay in euros. I can tell you the way it breaks down. I have no secrets from you guys. It costs 1,100 yen, which is just about €10, to buy the katate. I go to the Kuramon Arcade, which is a really charming place, a food-oriented arcade just to the north of here. And I buy them from a lady who must think I'm crazy. I mean, I've bought like 10 of them so far from her. She must think I love them and that my house is very, very cold indeed and I need to wear 10 at once. Then the postage to anywhere in the world is included in the 30 price, and it's about $5. And so I'm making about $15 profit on each one. But I deserve it, I like to think. The New Statesman never got back to me about the article I proposed. I proposed a column, actually, which is a bit ambitious of me, a Life in Osaka column. And I'm still wrestling with what I would write in that. Happiness is a warm slum. How can happiness be a warm slum? How could you be happy to live amongst poor people? Well, the answer is that happiness is relative, and you get a sense of happiness from being slightly better off than the people around you, which is a little bit unsettling. But the fact is that if I live in a rich area and I'm the poorest person there, I'm going to feel miserable. But I'm the wealthiest person, it seems to me, in a very poor area. I mean, it's so poor here. There's a lot of garbage reprocessing plants one or two blocks north of here. So what I see is poor people hauling by hand wooden carts covered in either flattened cardboard boxes or aluminium cans, which they've collected from the streets, and they take there for money, probably not very much money. They also collect, you know, old fridges, washing machines, TV sets, and take them up there and dump them to be scrapped, recycled, reprocessed. So, and actually, I didn't really know where these guys were coming from. I'd done an article for Vice magazine about the Osaka homeless about 7 years ago in Osaka. I went and interviewed people on the subway and also in a encampment of blue tarpaulin dwellings, which they were using down the side of the zoo. There's a road there with no buildings right by the zoo. And the homeless people, almost like animals, clustering close to the animals in the zoo, were being kept in, or keeping themselves in, wooden houses, which they'd built, and then furnished with sort of Hello Kitty curtains. They were very, very tidy houses, and they're very orderly homeless people. You really, it's a shanty town, but you really wouldn't think of it as dangerous in any way. These people were moved away from the zoo, and they're now... There's a subway station called, I think it's called Imaike or Tamaike, which I discovered by chance. It's really just to the south of here. I was going on Sunday by bike to IKEA, which is out in the docks, and I got sort of hopelessly lost, and I found myself in this shanty town, which is really incredible. If you haven't seen that degree of poverty in Japan, it really is an eye-opener, and... It's basically a triangular park which homeless people have occupied. And it's like it's kind of like being in Resident Evil. I mean, you feel like you're surrounded by zombies, people limping in wheelchairs, dressed in rags, living in cardboard boxes, a lot of police presence. It's not far from a prostitution district as well. There's an open, like an 8-block kind of area just at the bottom of the Dobutsu in my arcade, which is for prostitution. I haven't really walked the streets and seen, there are apparently girls in windows or girls lolling in corridors outside, and but I'm a little bit scared to sort of go down there and look at that. Foreigners are rather frowned on, apparently, in that area. My impression is that foreigners, that the big picture, really, I mean, I've been here 3 weeks, and obviously I come here every year to Japan, and I've been coming here since 1992. But I remain a foreigner. My command of the Japanese language is still very, very basic. And I think I'm completely resigned to feeling ostracized, to feeling anomalous. And I feel that Japanese people are getting increasingly intolerant of foreigners. I really sense it in the way people look at you on the street. If you're a foreigner, at best, you're ignored completely. Next level down would be that you're considered like a walking gaffe, something that's a little bit regrettable, but, you know, we'll kind of look the other way. Very few people, I think, are actively curious about you or actively admiring, as they might once have been. I think there was a time in the 80s when it was cool to be foreign, possibly in Japan. It's really, that time is really gone with the recalibration of the whole world economy to Asia. And with Japan's new, what I've called the new sakoku, the new turning in on itself. There's less optimism, obviously, in the economy, and there's less curiosity about foreign places, I think. So that gives my lifelong and vocational affection for Japan, and, you know, it starts in my childhood, and it's really been a thread that's carried through my whole life. The quality or the character of unrequited love, and I'm fine with that. I don't mind being anomalous here, being even more eccentric than I'm considered in the West, because I love it. I love Japan for so many different reasons. I love the way that it's really the antithesis of my hometown of Edinburgh in Scotland, which is the part I come from. Notoriously beautifully planned crescents in the Georgian style, the new town of Edinburgh, and yet tremendously grey and boring at the same time. There's nothing but railings and enormous monumental stones and Georgian astragaled windows, and really nothing of any interest there, except for just a huge fuck-off class signifier, you know, saying we are grand sweeping crescents for very wealthy people, and we have gardens behind railings nearby. In Japan, the streetscape is, you couldn't imagine anything more different. It's cramming as much information and detail and commerce into every square meter as possible. So you get these higgledy-piggledy, apparently undesigned or randomly designed streets with constant surprises, architectural surprises that just keep stopping me in my tracks. Signage, contrasts, temples suddenly in the middle of shopping arcades, and or little shrines rather, not temples, and so on and so on. I find it endlessly fascinating, and yeah, there's enough to keep me here and to spellbind me. You could say that I've come here at a time when Japan is at its least fashionable and its least interesting to the rest of the world. There's not very much interesting coming out of Japan. I was looking at the Twitter feed of Jon Snow in Tokyo. I used to read his blog religiously, and I noticed that in his last 50 or 100 tweets, almost none of them are about Japanese things at all. He's tweeting about American films, American technology, gaming. Nothing, no immersion in Japanese culture, and I wonder if that happens to you. I wonder if you stay here as a foreigner for a long time, you really run out of things to talk about in Japanese culture, or perhaps you simply feel subtly and unconsciously the rejection of this culture, of you and your values, and you can't, it's difficult to maintain this stance of unrequited love. I don't know, I hope to, but let's see how it goes. I'm here apparently to grow old in and with Japan, because Japan has an aging population. I am an aging individual now. I'm over 50, and let's see whether I can age gracefully in this country. I'm sometimes accused of being a bandwagon jumper and trendy, but in this case it's completely the opposite. It's eccentric and perverse to have come to Japan at a time when most people see very little interest in Japan. They see a lot of interest in China and in Asia in general. So insofar as Japan is still a part of Asia, although it's considered a sort of bridge between Asia and the West, I guess. But now it's very firmly in Asia, and it's interesting to the degree that it's in Asia. Asia is a dangerous and, you know, we're 500 miles here from Seoul, Korea, which is possibly on the brink of some sort of conflict, or is in some kind of conflict with North Korea at this very moment. It's a little bit close for comfort. Yeah, I'm kind of anomalous, and I'm. It reminds me, there's a passage in the Book of Japans where a foreigner commits every gaffe that you're told not to do in the guidebooks. He sort of uses the wrong shoes on the wrong surfaces. He tosses aside a name card, and so on and so on. He pees into the hand washing part of the toilet. So I kind of feel like every foreigner is really considered a walking gaffe. And so far, the people who've befriended me, there's just been two. I should point out here that I'm living alone. This may surprise some people because I was supposed to move here to be with my girlfriend and the rabbit, our rabbit. But I have sort of visiting rights to go and see the rabbit. I've seen the rabbit twice. The rabbit is in my girlfriend's family house. My girlfriend has a very demanding day job, which 10 hours a day, and she has to make a packed lunch, and she has to get her clothes ready for it. And basically, there's so little in the new house that she can't really do that, at least not economically, from here. So she's continuing in the family house, and I've been for the past 3 weeks in this new house, living alone. And it's very austere. It's also fantastic, this house. It's on four levels. It's got a garage on the ground floor, which could be a commercial space. It could be a cafe or an events space eventually. Or, you know, if we're really short of money and there's no other way, we might even just let somebody park their car there. That would probably pay at least half of the rent of the whole building. I hope we don't have to do that, though. And then it's got a kitchen and bathroom level, the next level up. It's with no fridge at the moment, no washing machine. It's got some basic cooking facilities, a gas cooker. Then the next level up is the living room and bedroom, and then there's a roof level above that, which has real possibilities. Very pleasant roof. It's a very nice area. It's very quiet, opened out, because there are some very high density residential blocks right in front of me here, which have meant that the street area can actually be much wider and more open than it usually is in Japan. So there's a real sense of spaciousness and light, something I sorely lacked in Berlin. I was, for the last 4 years, in a very dark ground floor courtyard apartment in Berlin that almost was like night during the day, and made my electricity bills massive as well, because the lights were on all day. And there are a couple of primary schools nearby here, so the air is filled with the sounds of children. They sound very happy and excited. Children, I think, are very indulged in Japan. They're also very regimented, kindly regimented. So there's what I've called the sexy affirmation of the eternal hai, meaning yes, of course, which I transmuted in my Book of Scotlands into a description of Scottish children, and saying that they spoke the eternal I, which, of course, they don't. We're naysayers in Scotland. Protestants. Protestants basically say no to everything. And introverts also, I guess. Here in Japan, you have to say a group yes, a loud group yes. And I was very surprised to hear baseball games being played on Sundays. People come back to school basically every day of the week. And there are chimes of Big Ben type or sort of musical chimes marking the day, and announcements and things. And it sounds like a very fun conformity, a quirky conformity. This is the one of the paradoxes of Japan, that it's a tremendously rigid and conformist culture, and yet it's conformist in ways that are eccentric, that seem to us eccentric, and also very creative and inventive. So there's a collective inventiveness which I am perpetually amazed by. They come up with such original things, despite being, you would think, being a society of the mass and of conformity and of groups and of collectivism. So our kind of cherished notion that individuality is allied with creativity, actually, maybe it's not. So I've just been to have lunch at Muji, which I don't recommend because it's very expensive. You get very tiny dishes of cauliflower and pumpkin and stuff for over 1,000 yen, almost no food at all. And I was very struck by, I mean, Muji once excited me enormously, to the extent that Muji opening in Berlin was, you know, just 2 years ago or something, one of the most exciting things I could even imagine. Now when I go through Muji, I just think, why do they have such a grudge against color? There's this kind of relentless attack on color. Things are considered elegant in Muji to the extent that they remove color. So everything has to be charcoal gray or cream, slightly off-white. Once you've been to IKEA, that was my trip on Sunday, and I really appreciate IKEA, especially in Japan. It's funny, in Berlin I'm excited by Muji, in Japan I'm excited by IKEA. That's me, it's so perverse. But when you see a sofa in IKEA that basically is ultra stark and white, a sofa bed, which I have my eye on, called Harkus or something like that, folds out to be a double bed. You see that and it's $150. And then in Muji, you know, it could well be a Muji product. It's very simple and stark and it's off-white. In Muji, the sofas are all $600 or $800 for rather shabby looking things. So I certainly wouldn't invest large amounts of money furnishing my house at Muji. I can get all that no brand stuff anyway. But what I was going to describe was the way you, when you come up on the escalators, you go through four floors or five floors of Muji, and then at the top of the building in number Muji, it's actually Tower Records, unrelated, using the same building. So you come up thinking you're going to get another floor of this relentless grayness, and you get this visual clutter. Suddenly you think, wow, Muji, the top floor of Muji is really weird. Like they've got all this hand-drawn labels and notice boards and... it looks awful. It looks like an estate agent's window, you know, before they discovered computer graphics. And you actually realize that this is Tower Records. Tower Records, for some reason, they're a big conglomerate. And Tower of Japan is the only one surviving, of course. All the others have folded. Tower Japan is a separate company now, I think. But they've gone for this handwritten, our staff loves the records kind of aesthetic, where they get everything. Obviously, it's all promotions and, you know, the usual business for big record stores, but they get the staff to hand letter it so that it looks like the enthusiasm of a little indie store where the staff is actually saying, hey, this is a great album, check it out. They did have my Hypnoprism album, I'm happy to say. I always do stock checking. They had one copy, the Cherry Red edition, relatively reasonably priced. It was less than 2,000 yen. CDs have been overpriced in Japan at about $30 or 3,000 yen. At the moment I'm recording, doing a recording project for John Henriksson, who's a Swedish guy based in Paris and who runs a record label which specializes in vinyl and in doing kind of serene, it's called Tona Serena, serenely toned music. So I'm making some serenely toned songs based on samples John has given me at the moment. I went out last week because I had to do the Vampire Weekend remake, remix, remodel. I had to go out and buy a preamp. And so I'm using that to record vocals for this new project. And that should be... I'm happy to make videos, but I bought a camera. I keep breaking cameras and throwing them away, but I bought a new still digital camera when I first arrived here, only to find that it doesn't have sound and it doesn't have movies on it, so I'm going to have to borrow a movie-capable camera to start making videos for the new songs I'm doing for John. In the blacky bowl, you will see, believe you me, more than you can know, to catch your kiss, or to see it, or swim through blood and snow. The record is called the Thunder Clown, and I think it'll be a four-track EP. what else to tell you? I make records. I make podcasts like this for my dad because he's unable to read and write following a stroke. And I just thought it would be nice to do the same for you and go back a little bit to blogging without having to do all the typing that blogging entailed. The summary is that I'm very happy to be in Japan. I'm looking forward to seeing my Tokyo friends, Jan Lindenberg, and others who are up there, Yo-Yo. They're promising to come fairly soon, and I don't know. I think they're going to stay here, but I guess they'll just have to sleep on the denki carpet. We have insects vacant evening early in December, so Yo-Yo is coming down for that. She's the chef at Vacant, which is a very fashionable Harajuku gallery, Tokyo. They're coming to Osaka for a day. I'm hoping to get up to Kyoto at some point soon to see my friends there. And yeah, one of the points of being in Kansai, apart from the fact that Osaka is, it's a lot more shitamachi than Tokyo. It's a lot more real, for want of a better term. No, I can't say real. That's rockist. It's basically gritty. It's more gritty and it's more poor, and there are more contrasts of wealth and poverty. There's obviously a fantastically productive economy here, but also and it's not even necessarily a but. I think it's an and therefore there are a lot of poor people who are kind of running around collecting the refuse. So even if New Statesman doesn't want this column about happiness being a warm slum, and you know, I'm fascinated in the moral ambiguity of that as well. Should I be happier amongst poor people? Shouldn't I really be suffering amongst the rich and paying rich prices for everything? Be a junior rich person rather than a senior poor person. It's a bit like being a young old person versus an old young person. I guess I'm a young old person now. Hopefully there'll be more letters from the edge soon. This has been the first podcast from Osaka. Hope you enjoyed it.